We're holding on to Chesamad Beis about a third of the way down the arm of the line against Lakeach. We were in the middle of a discussion as follows. We had a case where a mother, the mother of Shmuel Ba'aba, had written a document, that gives her son rights to the Nechassim ahead of her husband. We talked yesterday, is her husband the same as Shmuel Ba'aba's father, and she just wants to prevent his other brothers from getting it, or is this her first husband? Is Shmuel Ba'aba her son from her first marriage? Whatever it is. So now, later on, when she passed away, the question is he in fact entitled to those nechassim? We said Rabbi Yirmiya Ba'aba said yes, and Rabbi Yehuda argued that no. So Rabbi Yehuda argued that no on the basis of what Shmuel says, that the husband has first right to nechassim alum. So like this, if she signed away her nichsim, if she sold her nichsim alug to somebody else, then the husband has the right to take them away from the buyers afterwards. Teches on the base.
What
that? Teches on the base.
Teches.
Then on the other hand, if she sold them before her husband died, sold them while she was married to her husband, later on she died, her husband is considered to be as if he was the first lekeach, because midrabanon, he yarshins. It's actually midrabanon, midrarais, we'll learn about it in Baba Basra, the details, but her husband yarshins his wife. And therefore, he has first rights to it.
Even if she sold that.
That's what we're saying, yeah. There is actually the Rambam versus the Rosh discussed, does the Lakeach have any rights to that property? Meanwhile, until the wife dies after she sold it, whatever, that's not Negeah to our purposes. Anyways, so that was Rabbi Yehuda's position. Rabbi Yirmiya Ba'aba counters that there's a Mishnah in Baba Basra that seems to imply otherwise. The case was, we said, a father writes out a document that a certain piece of real estate of his is going to go to his son, Mehayom al Achamisa, when I die, retroactively it'll be yours as of now. What happens is, therefore, the father has the Peiros as long as he's alive. The son owns the Gufa Karka. Neither of them can sell it unilaterally, though, because both of them have rights over it. But we said, therefore, we said that if the father sells it, then okay, what
the rights of the father are irrevocable?
The father is able to sign it over to his son, sure.
No, but once he's signed it over, it's irrevocable.
It's probably irrevocable like any other document, but we're not getting into that. The point is that he's signed away the goof to his son, the payrus he retains. So if the father goes and sells it, what is he selling? He's selling the payrus. Fine. The buyer will have the right to the payrus as long as the father's alive. If the son dies, though, then the lekeach doesn't have anything until the father dies. Now, one last thing. Now, the last thing we said in the Gemara is that Reb Yirmiya Ba'aba wants to understand that Mishnah like Rish Lakish. Rish Lakish's position is that regardless whether the father dies first or whether the son dies first, Either way, once the father is dead, then the sale will be finalized. Namely, the Itmar. So that's where we're holding the Itmar. The line begins like Keach, about a third of the way down the Amud. The Itmar, because in fact there was a discussion on it. Machra av ben b'chaya av or mesa ben b'chaya av. Suppose then that the son sells this property. Again, this is property that he eventually would have inherited from his father anyway, and we'll take up that point later on in the Amud. But for the time being, what's important is the father signed away that property to him, meaning the goof of the karka to him. The son sold that goof while his father was alive. Umesa ben b'chaya av. Later on, the son dies while the father is still alive. Rabbi Yochanan amar lekan lekeach, Rish Lakish amar kan lekeach. So Rabbi Yochanan says that the lekeach has not acquired it in that case. The third party has not acquired it in that case because the son died before he ever inherited it from his father. Whereas Rish Lakish says he does. And by the way, this is one of the few cases. Usually the halacha is like Rabbi Yochanan against Rish Lakish. This is one of the few cases where the halacha is like Rish Lakish. That is why Rabbi Yirmiya Ba'aba, and we're going to see Rabbi Yehuda agrees with that concept also, would rather understand the Mishnah according to Rish Lakish. So, Rabbi Yochanan, he says that the Lakeach is not koine in that case. Why? Amalach, he'll tell you. You have to understand the Mishnah properly. Ki katani masnisin mochar aben lekona lekeach ad shiyom asav. What is the Mishnah saying? If the son sells the property, the lekeach has not acquired it, because at that point the son only has the goof, he doesn't have the payrus yet, and
as you actually need the Peres to sell a property?
No, but the point is, well, we're going to get into the we're going to get into the matter of Kinyan Peres and Kinyan Aguf soon. But the point is, the son doesn't have complete rights over the property. He only has partial rights over it.
Apparently, we're saying he doesn't have any.
No, but listen. The point is that as long it's true, the Mishnah says, the Mishnah clearly says, Machar ben en lelakeach hashiyom asav. The lakeach doesn't have anything because what's he supposed to do? The peiros belong to the father. The goof, okay, he has the goof. What does having the goof help him? Usually, you have a goof of karka in order to use the peiros.
The question is the sale of the goof dependent on the simultaneous sale of the peiros?
Basically,
not?
That's what we're saying.
That's
but wait,
what
yeah, listen. So therefore. So Rabbi Yochanan says like this: when the Mishnah says Machar Ben Loi Kona Lakeach Hachi Yom Sa'ab, the Lakeach has not fully acquired it until the father dies, and which implies Chimay Sa'ab is the Lakeach, which implies in turn that when the father dies, the Lakeach will fully acquire it. Rabbi Yochanan says that only applies the Loi Mesa Ben B'Chaya Av to Asul Ledei Ben. That only applies if the son did not die while the father was still alive, where then, if the father dies first, what happens? As soon as the father dies, the son inherits the peiros. The son inherits the peiros, which all this time the father has had. Now, the sale can fully go through, and then the keach acquires it. But if the son dies while the father is still alive, the property never reached the son's possession. So Rabbi Yochanan would say, in that case, even when the father dies, in that case, the lekeach still doesn't get it.
The ban is first.
Yep. Alma kasava, which goes to show, therefore, that Rabbi Yochanan holds, kinyan peiros kinyan aguftami. Evidently, then, Rabbi Yochanan holds that the fact that the father has, all this time, rights over the peiros is the equivalent of having rights over the guf. Therefore, when the son sold it, he was selling something that doesn't belong to him. The goof doesn't fully belong to him because the goof, in a certain sense, still belongs to the father. Therefore, that is why Rabbi Yochanan says, Mela, if the father died first and the son yarshened it, okay, he has peiros, he has the goof, now he can go sell it all to a third party. But if the son dies first, he never had the full goof anyhow because all this time the father had the peiros. According to Rabbi Yochanan, kinyan peiros is the equivalent of kinyan goof. Therefore, he sold something that's not his, and therefore, the lekeach can't lay any claim to it afterwards.
It's a logic, but it's
okay.
It's logic.
That's how Rabbi Yochanan understands it.
Where does he take it from?
That's how he understands the Mishnah. That's how he's understanding the Mishnah. Wait, Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish amar kana lekeach, whereas Rabbi Shlakish says that in that case, the lekeach is kone it. Because he says, more strictly, even if the son dies before the father, because he says, Kikatani masnis in machar ben en lekeach hachiyam sa'ab. Let's look back at the Mishnah. The Mishnah had said, if the son sells the property, the lekeach doesn't have any control over it until the father dies, which implies, kimayis av mia isle lekeach, which implies, okay, so when the father dies, the lekeach will have full rights over it. The Shlokish holds, so it doesn't matter whether it's a case where the father, where the son outlived the father, and therefore the son fully inherited it, and then you're saying that now the sale will go through. Doesn't matter whether the son died first, where then the property never reached his full control. Either way, according to the Shlokish, eventually, when the father dies, that lekeach will be koina the whole thing. Alma kasava, which goes to show that Rish Lakish holds, kinyan peiros lav kinyan aguf domi. Having ownership over the peiros is not the equivalent of owning the guf hakarta. Therefore, when the son has sold this property, he's selling something that belongs to him. He had full rights to do that. Okay, two
well,
different ways of understanding.
But the condition was he doesn't owe it till father dies.
The condition is that as long
what
as the father is alive,
yeah.
As long as the father is alive, we're saying the father has the peiros.
Only
peiros. The
Akai
son owns the goof.
Right,
but since Rish Lakish holds kinyan peiros is not kinyan aguf, it means the father doesn't have any ownership of the goof anymore. All he has ownership of is the peiros. Fine, the son is able to sell the goof.
In other words, according to Rish Lakish, the sale of the goof is
independent of the payer.
A full unconditional sale, which is not the case for
you. Right. Okay. So now we have the Mishnah and we have the analysis of it. So if we say we hold like the Shlokish, so now let's go back to our case. Bein Rabbi Yirmiya ba'Abba, Bein Rabbi Yehuda, Klib Shim ben Lakish Svirlo. Evidently, both Rabbi Yirmiya ba'Abba, who hold that the Shmuel ba'Abba in the original case is entitled to these Nechasim, and Rabbi Yehuda, who said that it's not, both of them will agree with Rish Lakish's understanding of the Mishnah. Again, the reason why we will assume that is because the halacha is, this is one of the three cases where the halacha is like Rish Lakish against Rabbi Yochanan. Therefore, we should assume, unless we have evidence to the contrary, that all the later Amoraim are going to hold like Rish Lakish.
Why did we decide the halacha according to Rish Lakish?
That's apparently, and this is, why was it? I don't know. It's in Rav Basra. It mentions that it's one of the three cases.
Yeah, but specifically, why this case?
Maybe because Rish Lakish's understanding of the Mishnah is more straightforward, because after all, according to him, the Mishnah is saying as a blanket statement that when the father dies, the seor will go through. It doesn't make a distinction whether the son died first or not. Okay, whatever it is. So, v'ka'amar Rabbi Yirmiyahu ba'Abba. So now getting back to our case of Rav Shmuel ba'Abba and his mother and the property that his mother signed over to him, again, from her nichsim alur. Rabbi Yirmiyahu ba'Abba says like this. Think of it like this. If you were to say that Kinyan Peiris is the equivalent of Kinyan Aguf, like Rabbi Yochanan says, then, well then, it wouldn't work. Because then, if the father dies, but the son died before him, then why should the Lekeach be able to own anything? Then you would have Rabbi Yochanan's Svara, that when the son sold the karka, he didn't fully own it. The father owned Peiris of it. Peiris, if we're going to assume, is Kinyan Aguf, then the sale doesn't go through. Evidently, then, having ownership of Peiris is not the equivalent of having ownership of the Guf. Well, if in that case, then, with Nichsimalug, after all, what's the definition of Nichsimalug? The wife herself owns the Guf. The husband is entitled to the Peiris. So what are you telling me, Rabbi Yehuda, that Ha'isha Shemachar B'Nichsimalug, and then she dies, her husband can take it away from the seller? That contradicts the implication of that Mishnah. You see from that Mishnah, the way Rish Lakish explains it, ownership of Peiris does not prevent a sale from going through. So fine, then in that case, why should the husband's ownership of the Peiris prevent the sale from going through? The sale, or in this case, the giving away. She gave away the property to her son, Rav Shmuel Ba'Abba. Okay, the husband has the rights to the Peiris. Very nice, he can continue having the rights to his Peiris. Doesn't mean that Rav Shmuel Ba'Abba shouldn't get the karka.
Does that apply to a wife, actually?
There's no reason yet to assume that there should be any difference. Wait.
But they might be further down the road.
Wait. Adrua lakamei de Rabbi Yehuda. So they brought back this point of Rabbi Yirmiyahu ba'Abba to Rabbi Yehuda. Amalahu, he said, it's true, you do have that Mishnah, it's a good point, but hachi amar Shmuel zu ein adoma l'mishnah seinu. However, you should know that Shmuel said the case of the husband and wife is not like the case of that Mishnah. My time, that's a why not, what's the distinction between them? Amar Rabbi Yosef, because like this, Bishleima itani ipcha, because it would, you could say it's the same thing if the Mishnah had said it the other way around. Suppose you had the reverse case. The Mishnah had talked about a case where father signs over the Nechasim to his son. When you get down to it, the son is eventually going to inherit from the father anyhow in the normal course of events. At this point, the Gemara is assuming a father doesn't inherit from a son, which the Gemara is going to ask in a couple of lines that, in fact, he could. If the son dies childless, the father will inherit from him. But wait, we'll get back to that point. Right? The point is like this. If the Mishnah had said the other way around, if the Mishnah had given us a reverse scenario where the son takes Nechasim that belong to him and signs them away to his father, and then we could have the same distinction over there, which one of them died first. Then ikal mifshim in the kinyan peiros lak kinyan aguf dami. Then you could say that okay, yes, at that point then, same idea in reverse. The son is entitled to the peiros because he is the original owner of the property. The father is entitled to the guf, and you could get into the discussion of what happens if it gets sold while both of them are still alive, and then one of them dies first. Well, then, then you could say for sure, okay, it's a given then. The reason why the Mishnah is telling us that the sale will eventually go through when the son, who again, in this scenario, is the original owner, the opposite of the actual case the Mishnah gives us.
He
signs away the karka to his father. Then we're saying, suppose now the father goes and sells that property. So what has he sold? The guf. The son, remember, still retains the peiros. If you are to say now that once the father dies, the lekeach is koine, regardless whether the son, who is the original owner of the property, died first or not, that would tell you clearly that kinyan peres is not the kinyan agur. Because
we know it's not the case.
Not that it's not the case. That's not how the Mishnah gives us the scenario. The Mishnah gives us the opposite scenario. But given that the Mishnah tells us a case the other way around, where the father was the original owner of the property and he signed it over to his son, the point is, not necessarily do we have to say that the reason why the sale goes through is because the father's ownership of the peiros does not amount to ownership of the guf. No, there might be a different reason. Mishum d'roi liyoshehu. The reason is very simple, because ultimately the son is in a position to inherit from his father. So eventually, it doesn't really matter for that purpose then whether the son died first or whether the father died first. Either way, in the normal course of events, he would eventually yarshin it from his father. So like this, okay, so we're saying if he died first, okay, he never was actually in a position to yarshin it, but nevertheless, though, you know, we can consider it sort of as if he did, and therefore that'll make it possible for the sale to go through. In other words, even if we were to say that the father's ownership of the payers does amount to ownership to a certain partial ownership of the guf, you could still say, fine, but eventually when the son dies and then later on the father dies, then at least the sale can go through. Because at that point, the father has nothing left of it. Not necessarily does that prove anything about kinyan peiros and kinyan aguf.
So if we're saying in conclusion that either way, if we had the Mishnah had described the case where the father bestows to the son or the son to the father, we could not have drawn.
No. If the Mishnah had told us a case where the son signs it over to the father, then given that a father does not, under normal circumstances, inherit from his son, then that would prove that. So then the only factor to consider is kinyan peiros. And if we say then, therefore, that the son only has kinyan peiros, and yet we're saying that the sale is able to go through fully once the father dies, regardless whether the son died first or not, that would prove Rabbi Amir Ba'aba's point. And then you could say that, yes, because you would say that then there's not a matter of Yerusha to be involved. Then there's just a matter of Peiros or not. When you have a father to a son, then you have the additional factor of Yerusha. So maybe that's so regardless.
We could say if the son bestows to the father, maybe, but in the other case, in reverse, maybe not.
No,
I have two situations.
I don't understand what you're saying. If the father bestows it to the son, you could say two reasons. You could give two different possible reasons why eventually the sale will go through once both of them are dead. One can be because the father's ownership of the peiros never precluded the sale from going through, because kinyan peiros lack kinyan aguf. Or you could say, maybe it is kinyan aguf, but okay, the son's eventually going to inherit it anyway, and therefore that makes it possible for the sale to go through. You can't prove one way or the other which factor is the determining one.
From the father to the son.
If it goes from the son to the father, then you know there's not Yerusha involved, then you know it must be the peiros aspect.
He said that in some circumstances.
That's what the Gemara is going to get to now. Omale Abaya answers right back to him, to Rabbi Yehuda. What are you talking about? Are you telling me that a son only inherits from a father and a father never inherits from a son? As a matter of fact, yes, it can happen. The Gemara tells us in Rav Basra, when we'll learn all the genium of inheritance, we'll talk about it, that yes, if a person dies childless, then the Yerusha reverts back to his father. And then it gets to his father, if he himself is still alive, if not to his father's other heirs, it keeps on going, generation after generation, back up as necessary.
And therefore your proof.
So your proof is not really valid. It doesn't matter whichever way the Mishnah had told us the case. You could still argue you have the two factors. You have the factor of Peiros versus the factor of Yerusha. Now, Ella, no, you have to say like this. What would be a scenario? Why would you have? Abaya tells Rabbi Yehuda, fine, let's take your scenario where a son has property and he signs it over to his father. Why would he be doing that? Evidently, he's only doing that because he wants to prevent his sons from inheriting that property. By signing it over to his father, what he's accomplishing is that now, if he dies first, his father will inherit it. And if his father dies first, then his father's heirs will inherit it. His father's other brothers. His father's other sons.
Meaning himself.
The point is that he's trying to under normal circumstances here. Let's give the people names. You have you Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. So Yitzchak has signed over his property to Avraham. Why is he doing that? Because he doesn't want Yaakov and Esav to inherit it. Instead, he wants it to revert back to Avraham, and Yishmael may inherit it. Okay, maybe Yitzchak himself can re-inherit it also, but then fine, from him he'll make sure to bequeath it to other people. Whatever. The point is, he wants to make sure that his own sons Yaakov and Esav don't inherit it. Well, Hachanami. Well, then going back to the case of Reb Shmuel Ba'aba's mother, going back to the Mishnah. Fine, in the Mishnah, you could argue the same thing. Why would a father be signing over the nechassim to one son? Same idea. He wants to prevent his other sons from inheriting it. The reverse. So Avraham is signing it over to Yitzchak because he doesn't want Yishmael to get a hold of it. He wants that only Yitzchak should get it and will in turn bequeath it to Yaakov and Esau. So you can't say, in other words, that there's any particular reason why the Mishnah gave us one case as opposed to the other. Either case is exactly parallel.
That's a bias.
So you can't really prove another. You can't say that the Mishnah. You can't really say that because of that the Mishnah is different than the case of Reb Shmuel Ba'aba and his mother. No, but we have a different reason then why we should say that the case of Reb Shmuel Ba'aba is different than that case in Brother Basra. The reason is Mishum Takanas Usha. The reason is because of the Takana that the Chachamim made in Usha. We learned way back in Rosh Hashanah that there were 10 places in the years before and after the Churban. There were 10 places that Sanhedrin moved. A couple of times they were in Usha, which is a town in the Galil, in northern Eretz Israel. And during one of the periods when they were there, they made this takana. A specific takana that applies to a husband and wife. It doesn't apply to any other relationships. If a woman sells her nichsim alug while her husband is alive, umesa, and then she dies, habal motzim yad alakuchas. The husband is able to take it away from the sellers, from the buyers. So this that Shmuel said at the top of the Amud that we learned yesterday is actually, it's not his own statement, it's takanas usha. So that's a special case. In the case, it's true. The Mishnah is telling us a case of a father and a son. Takanas usha doesn't apply to fathers and sons. It applies to husbands and wives. Therefore, that's a reason to draw a distinction. Amr of Idibav and Afananami Tanena. Yes, as a matter of fact, we can prove that Takanas Usha is indeed a valid thing, that there is, that we do say that with a, that, that, that a woman's nichsim alug, that her husband is considered to be the first.
Why was it the economy in the first place?
So we'll talk about that as we go through. We'll see. We'll see the reasoning behind it. But yeah. Actually, there's an interesting thing. Sam Sofer says, based on the continuation of the sugya, he explained basically what Takanas Usha did is sort of it upgraded the husband's right by one level. There's two different ways of looking at it. You could look at that his kinyan peiros on the nichsim alug is a really weak kinyan, and therefore they upgraded it to a stronger thing that he has kinyan peiros, which has a certain strength to it. Or you could say that they took his kinyan peiros that he already had and upgraded it as if it was kinyan aguf, and therefore he has first rights over the property. We'll see as we go through the sugya that there's different ways of understanding takanas usha, and as well as different possibilities that maybe even takanas usha doesn't apply, so that it fits with that understanding. So we can also prove that takanas usha is a real valid thing, and therefore that it affects the disposition of nichsim alug. Namely, you have a braisa that says as follows. Suppose that Edom come to Beis Din. They say, Me'idim onu be'ish ploini shagirish asishtev nothing ksubasa. They say, we give eders that Ploini divorced his wife and paid her huksuba. But what turns out is, v'harei tachtavim shamashtoi. Now, what happens is that... what happens is actually we find she still is happily married to him. She's still married to him. She'll still doing for him the wifely duties. The nymphs are Zonimin, and now it turns out that they are Edom Zonimin. So as Edom Zonimin, Basusim Lotasha Zaman, they have to be punished according to the amount. Now what were they trying to do on the face of it? They were trying to deprive her of her ksuba. They would have said the husband already paid off her ksuba. She's not owed that amount anymore. We don't say that they should have to pay off her whole ksuba, because when you get down to it, ksuba is always a chancy thing. Yes, she's still happily married. Well, what does that mean? It means that if she ends up getting divorced later on or her husband dies, the ksuba will be paid out. On the other hand, if she dies first, the ksuba won't be paid out. The husband will inherit her. And it affects not only the ksuba. For our purposes, we're talking about it also affects the nichsim alug. because the nichsim lahu, same idea. If she dies, if her husband dies first or divorces her, she's going to get back her nichsim lahu. And if not, then her, and if her, if she dies first, her husband is going to inherit them.
The good kind of parents.
The good, yeah.
If she would write a will that she wants to go back to her immediate family.
But that's different. We had such cases in Yuvama similar to that, but we're talking about under ordinary circumstances. Ordinary circumstances. And the truth is, by the way, actually, the Gemara talks about in Bava Basra the idea that the fact that a husband yashins his wife, the Gemara discusses over there, if it's Daraisa or Dirabanan, but even if it's Dirabanan, the Chachamim made it a very, very strong takana. So it's pretty difficult to override it. Yeah. Anyway, so you can't say the Edom should have to pay the entire value of the Ksuba.
It has nothing to do with it?
So there's Ksubas Bnin Dichrin, which we're going to talk about soon. There's a special takana that her sons from this marriage are entitled to the value of her Ksuba. We learned about it.
And the Malog, the Nifsim Malog also?
If I remember correctly, no. I think the Nifsim
was married to other sons. He had other sons, then not fair for her.
Right. I don't remember actually whether the Nifsim Malog are included in Ksubas Bnin Dichrin. They are.
Okay, so I mean, yeah. I would imagine that. Yeah.
Nichsus and Barzal Night, right.
Yeah.
Okay, anyway, so the point is Nichsus and Malug versus Nichsus and Barzal. Nichsus and Barzal, she owned all this time, so obviously, Nichsus and Barzal, actually the husband owned, he just had to reimburse her the amount of them, as we learned to Ksuba. Anyway, the point is, so we don't, these items, I mean, you can't make them pay the entire value of the Ksuba plus the Nichsus and Malug, because not necessarily is it a given that they deprived her of it. Again, if she were to die first, then she's anyway deprived of them.
Right.
So what do we do? Ela tovas hanas ksubasa. Rather, they only have to pay the tovas hanas ksubasa. Ezo tovas hanas ksubasa. So what is the definition of tovas hanas? Umdin, we estimate, we evaluate, kama adam reitza litin b'ksubah shal zu, how much would another person, a third party, be willing to pay for this woman's ksubah, shim nis amala in iskarsha, that if she's widowed or divorced, that then he'll be able to collect it. But on the other hand, if she dies first, her husband's going to inherit her. So it's a risky investment, and therefore you're not going to pay. On a 200 zuz ksuba, you're not going to pay 200 zuz for it. But you'll pay some amount. For the chance to win 200 zuz plus the value of the nichsim malug. So that's the tovas hanas. That's how much you make the edim pay. Tosfos, by the way, has a discussion over here. Tosfos points out there's actually a Mishnah in Makos that says a similar concept. Why aren't we bringing that? Why are we instead bringing a Braisa? So Tosfos discusses because that Mishnah might only be talking about the basic value of the Ksuba. Here we're talking about Nichsum Malug. The Braisa is more clearly talking about Nichsum Malug. Anyway, now, the Isaukadaitach Lesel Takonas Usha. Now then, sort of Idi Ba'oven points out, if you're going to say that Takonas Usha does not exist, am I Yerushena Baila? Who says that Well, in other words, we know, so fine, we said that there was a Takonas Usha. We have to consider, is that really a valid thing? The later Tanoia might disagree. Was there such a Takona? Is that Takona as broad as you're saying, etc.? So we were, in other words, because that's what we were saying. Rabbi Yirmiyah Ba'aba was arguing based on the Mishnah in Bava Basra. Rabbi Yehuda is arguing back that you're forgetting Takonas Usha. So now we have to prove, okay, is Takonas Usha a real thing? Now, if you're going to say that Takonas Usha is not a real thing, Amai Yerushena Baila, who says then necessarily that her husband is going to inherit from her if she dies first? Kizabin Ksubasa Lagamri. Why can't she sell the total value of her Ksuba? And then, in other words, what's the point? What did we say Takonas Usha is? Takonas Usha is that she can take the Nichsim Malug and sell them, but if she does, later on, if she dies first, her husband can take it away from the buyers because he has first rights over it. If it weren't for Takonas Usha, she could do that with her Nichsim Malug. And yet we're saying, yet the Braisa is clearly telling us that this potential buyer of her Nichsim Malug is taking his chances. He may not be able to keep those Nechosim. Obviously, that shows that Takonas Usha is a real thing. Amar Abaya, Sabaya says no, because im Omer b'Nichsim Malug, Yomer b'Nichsim Tzayin Barzal. Okay, maybe... Let's say even Takonas Usha is not a real thing. Let's say she can sell Nichsim Malug. She certainly can't sell Nichsim Tzayin Barzal, and Nichsim Tzayin Barzal are written into the Ksuba. So, the point is, we're saying that she might have forfeited her Ksuba, because if these Edim Zomin, if these Edim Zomin had been thought to be true Edim, she would have lost the value of her Ksuba, as well as the value of her Nichsim Tzayin Barzal. because the claim was that her husband paid it off already. Like this, instead, we're saying we're making them pay the tervis on all of it. Why? Because Nichset's saying, Basel, for sure she doesn't have the right to sell because her husband actually owns them. She's just entitled to reimbursement for them.
And therefore?
Therefore, in other words, Abaye says you can't necessarily prove from this Braisa anything. Maybe the Braisa means to say she would be able to sell her Nichsimalug, and that would have to be a valid permanent sale, and the husband has no further rights over it against Takana Susha. However, the Braisa is telling us when it comes to Nichset Sein Basel, there's no such thing. And therefore, you have to consider the Tervis Hanah of that. In other words, the Braisa is not specifying. The Braisa didn't specify whether it's talking about Malug or Tzoyn Basel. So you could say it's talking about Tzoyn Basel, and then you can't prove anything one way or the other about Nechse Malug. So yes, Takona Sosha might be a real thing, but you wouldn't know that necessarily from this Braisa. Yeah. I'm going to buy it. Tervis Hanah, Hoyova also the other name of Bel Milsa. So Abaye says, you know what, while we're on the subject of Tervis Hanah, let's say another din about it. Tervis Hanah, the Isha Habya. This concept of Tervis Hanah, if a woman sells off the value of her ksuba to somebody else, based on the Tervis Hanah, again, based on this person is taking a risk with his investment, he may or may not get it paid off. In other words, it's saying, like this, if my husband were to die first or divorce me, I would be entitled to 200 zuz. Instead, I'm selling you the rights to that. If he dies first or divorces me, you will be the one to collect that 200 zuz. On the other hand, if I die first, you're not going to get anything. So you're doing a risky investment. But yeah, this money that she earns in that way, it goes completely to her. Her husband has no rights over it. Why? Because if you were to think that, in fact, that money were to go to her husband, then why shouldn't this case, the previous case about the Edom Zomim, again, the case was the Edom Zomim claimed that she was paid off Uksuba. It turns out they're Edom Zomim, therefore they have to be penalized appropriately, and we make them pay the Tovah Sanah. If you were to say that the Tovah Sanah, anyway, went to the husband, then the Edom ought to be in a position to tell her, so, okay, we were false Edom, fine, we should be punished. What did we make you lose? E havim mizavnas lo la Tovah Sanah. Yes, fine. You could have sold your ksuba for Tervis Hanah, and like this, we were plotting to deprive you of that. Fine, but if you had sold it, Baal have a shock enough. Your husband just would have gone and taken that money from you anyway. So therefore, why should we have to pay you the Tervis Hanah when we didn't actually make you lose anything? You were Zomim, very nice, but Zomim is Asisim like Hasha Zomam. We wanted to deprive you of $100, therefore we have to pay $100. Like this, if the money was to go to her husband, we didn't deprive you of $100. Okay, we didn't deprive anybody, actually. We're claiming that the husband paid off the whole ksuba and owes nothing. Like this, the truth is there was still a ksuba and he could have sold the rights to it for a few bucks. So fine, you could say maybe we made him lose money, but not even really, because we were saying that he wouldn't ever have to pay anything. So we didn't really make anybody lose anything. So why should we have to pay you Tervis Hanah? Therefore, that proves that the money does in fact go to her, and because it goes to her, they really were trying to deprive her of it, and therefore you make them pay that amount. Rav Shalman says, no, you can't necessarily prove that, because Mishum de'ikar Ravach Besa. No, you could argue, maybe you could argue that in fact that Tervis Hanah money does go to her husband, but what happens if it goes to her husband? She gains from it, because then there's extra money in the household. Her husband now is able to use it more for household expenses. And so even if you were to say that the money, as soon as she sells it, the money immediately goes to her husband, fine, but since it helps towards household expenses, you could argue that Edom deprived her of that. And therefore, you should make them pay on that basis. Amar Rava, so Rava says, okay, that's a fair point, but Hilchas HaTovus HaNah Isha, the halacha nevertheless is like what Abaye said, this Tovus HaNah, if a woman sells the right to Uksuba, the Tovus HaNah does go to her. The Ein HaBaal Eichel Peiris, not only it goes to her, the husband is not even entitled to the Peiris of that money. Even though normally, we don't treat it like regular Nichsim Belug, where she owns it and the husband's entitled to the Peiris. My timer, what's the reason? Peira takina lo rabbanon, because the rabbanon made a takana that the husband is entitled to the peiros of his wife in the chasid. Peira the peiro lo takina lo rabbanon, but the rabbanon never made a takana that he should be entitled to peiros of peiros. And by peiros of peiros, So that's the thing. So there's a couple of different ways of explaining, and there's a couple of different ways of understanding what the Gemara is saying over here. That Iva, that Ashba discussed various approaches, but one way of looking at it, Tosfos mentions over here briefly, is when you have something like this, which comes completely out of left field, it's only indirectly related to any nechassim that she had previously, because like this, she sold the potential rights to Uksuba. It's not something, it's not nechassim that she brought into the marriage or anything, which you could say then he's entitled to pay her.
It's not really nechassim at all.
It is. She got actual cash. She got actual cash for it. But she's selling the potential, right. She's selling the potential rights to something, yes. She's selling it as an investment, basically.
So why are we talking about say it's there?
Because that's what we're saying. In other words, when you have something like this that came from the outside world, Me'alma, Tosfos says, such as the Tovus Hanah, then we say he's not entitled to that itself, nor is he entitled to payers of it. We don't treat it like regular nechassim of hers that become nechassim alone. Tosfos says, by the same token, for example, you know, going back to the previous parak when we learned all about Tashlumei Kefil and so forth, that suppose, for example, somebody else steals an animal of Nichsa Malug of the wife's, and eventually he's caught and has to pay Kefil. Tosfos says, by the same logic, the Kefil would go to the woman, not to her husband. Same idea. It's Me'alma. It comes from the outside world. It's not something, it's not a direct consequence of something that's, yeah. Ki also continues the Gemara. Ki also the Papa of Rav Huna Bredi Rav Shuma Beirav. When Rav Papa and Rav Huna Bredi Rav Shua came back from the yeshiva, Amri, they said, Tanena the Takanas Usha. We have a different proof. So far, we're still trying to prove that Takanas Usha is a real thing, that it really exists, that it really has the implications that we're saying. Which again, going back to the original part of the sugya over here, would mean therefore that there would be that in Shmuel Ba'aba's case, he wouldn't be entitled to those nechassim that his mother signed over to him because her husband would have first rights over it. We can prove from a Mishnah, namely our Mishnah in Bava Kamma, that Takanas Usha is a real thing. Namely, our Mishnah had said her eved va'isha p'diyasan ra, that tangling with an eved or a woman is you're in a bad way. Achoyva behen chayiv, if you injure them, you're going to be chayiv to pay. Behem shechobla b'achayim turim, but if they injure somebody else, they're potter because they don't have nechassim. We said avam mashamun la'achazman. We said later on, if they eventually get nechassim of their own, they have to pay. But for the time being, an eved knani doesn't have nechassim of his own. Mashakana eved kano rabbi. An Isha has no independent nechassim of her own either, because Nichsa Malug, her husband, has the payrus, and Nichsa Klein Barzel, he has the goof as well. So, the Isak Daitach Lesel, Takanas Usha. Now, if you were to argue that Takanas Usha does not exist, and therefore that she'd be able to sell her Nichsa Malug without the husband having any say in the matter, why are we saying Pigyasan Ra? Why are we saying that the victim is out of luck until she gets widowed or divorced or what have you and has money of her own? Why shouldn't she sell her Nichsa Malug and pay him off that way? Obviously that must mean Takanas Usha is a real thing. If she were to sell her Nichsa Malug, the husband would be able to preempt it. Therefore, there you go, Pigyasan Ra. Okay, the Gemara says back, no, because look according to your own svara. Nehi nami de'isa l'takonas usha. Granted, fine, let's say there is a takonas usha. V'lemotzi mezab milagamri. Fine, okay, let's grant that she can't completely sell the nichsim alug outright. Still, tezabin the nichsim alug v'tevis hanavetizim lay. Fine, let's use the tevis hanav method that we said before. Again, she could sell, not the nichsim alug themselves, fine, the husband has the rights to them, but sell the chance to acquire these nichsim alug. Again, it's like selling a lottery ticket, basically. You might win, you might not, depending on which of them dies first. So, fine, let her sell the lottery ticket, let her sell the tevis hanav, and then she'll have money to pay to pay the guy that she injured. The fact that we're not mentioning that shows that, in other words, it has nothing to do.
And that shows that Takanas Usha is...
No, in other words, even if Takanas Usha is a real thing, Takanas Usha didn't prevent her from selling the Tovus Hanah, it just prevented her from selling the actual Nichsim Alug.
Right.
Yet, you see, the Mishnah is not taking that into consideration. Why not? Ella Delesla. Evidently, we must be understanding the Mishnah is talking about, it so happens to be a case, she doesn't have any Nichsim Alug. Oh, Hinami the less law. Fine, so you could say the same thing then. The Mishnah is saying as a blanket statement to the Asan Ra, because yes, there can be a case where a woman has no Nichsim Alug, and therefore you, the Nesbo, are out of luck because there's nothing for her to pay out of. even forget about Takanas Osha or not, if there's no Nichsim Alog, then there's nothing for Takanas Osha to apply to.
Yeah, but that's a specific case.
But that's the point. In other words, the Mishnah obviously must be talking about such a case, because otherwise, Takanas Osha or not, she could sell the Tevis Hanah. And yet the Mishnah is not taking that into consideration. So obviously the Mishnah must be talking about such a case. Next question is, fine, never mind the Nichsim Alog. What about, why can't she sell the chances to earn Huksuba as Tevis Hanah? Same idea. If I die first, you get nothing. If my husband dies first or divorces me, you get the 100 or 200 Zuz. The answer is, that doesn't work because Hamani Rav Meir. That doesn't work because our Mishnah goes according to Rav Meir. Da'amar also le'la adam shidyishas ishtaf yudha sha'achas b'loik suba. He says a man and a woman are not allowed to live together for even a short time without a ksuba. So therefore, she can't sell off the rights to her ksuba. It's true, there is, that she, as a business proposition, she would be able to do it, because yes, it is a chance to get 100 or 200 zuz, but as a matter of halacha, the mayor holds you can't do it. Nothing doing. Who says you can sell half of it? According to the mayor, you can't sell any. You can sell the nixim alug. Nixim alug are outside the basic 1 in 200. But you can't sell the basic 1 or 200.
Anything the ksuba?
Yes, according to the mayor, no. Kol ha-poichos, the expression is, we learned in ksuba, that a mayor says that if you kol ha-poichos v'psula m'masayim l'amon imana, if you have anything less than the ksuba than 200 for a psula, for 100 for a mana, then it's called v'ilas nus. So no, nothing doing.
So doesn't you sell the mamish ksuba, but you sell the possibility that he or she will get the ksuba.
Indeed, that's what the Gemara is. Well, Tosfos and Amud Beis, Tosfos does point out, the Re points out that it's true, technically, of course, he'd still be out the same amount of money, and the Gemara is going to point that out in a second. Nevertheless, the Gemara is assuming at this point that once the Ksuba is not really under her name anymore, once there's a third party involved, Rav Meir would still consider it that there's no Ksuba. The Ksuba has to be adapted under her name. Okay. But it's not under her name
I'm holding it. She's holding it, but in case
right.
it will happen as she will receive it, that's not yours.
Right. Well, that's
so now it's in her shoes.
But basically, that's what the Gemara answers. But time am I that no. What's the reason? Kadesh leitei kalava ein avlaisia. Nu. After all, what's your mayor's reason why you can't have less than 200 or 100 respectively in the ksuba? Is because you don't want it to be too easy for him to divorce her. Well, fine. Hachaloy Megarishla. Fine. In this case, he's not going to divorce her either. The Megarishla also Hanaf the Zabni Governor Luxubas Mine. Fine. But you still have the same safeguard still exists. All it is instead of her collecting the Ksuba, you're going to have this third party collecting the Ksuba. But either way, you still have even if she sells it for Tevis Hanah, you still have the factor preventing him from being too quick to divorce her, because he knows he's going to be out 100 or 200.
If it's a third party that's getting benefit from the Ksuba, why would he be restricted in divorcing her in any way?
The reason for the ksuba, the mayor says, is because you want to discourage the husband from divorcing his wife too quickly, knowing that he's going to have to pay out a substantial amount of financially.
Right.
Well, if a third party is holding the ksuba, that's what the Gemara is answering. That the same factor still exists. He will have to pay that third party. The same 100 or 200 that he would have had to pay her, he's going to have to pay that other guy.
That's not the same. He's paying to someone else.
Doesn't matter. The point is, he's still going to be out the same amount of money.
He
doesn't want to lose money. So therefore, why? So again, we're back to the question: why should it be a problem for her to sell her ksuba b'tevis hanah? Even according to the mayor, if the whole reason why the mayor wants her to have a ksuba is shall I take halav ein of laitzia, as long as he knows he's going to be out the same 100 or 200, regardless, shouldn't matter who actually owns the rights to collect the ksuba right now. No, so that doesn't work. Ella, no, we'll try a different reason. The reason is tevis hanah merely. Because this concept of Tevis Hanah is really only, it's words. She's not actually rewriting the shtar in this other guy's name. She's verbally saying that if there's a ksuba to be collected, you'll collect it. Umili, loy mishtabi. Words, something, just a verbal commitment is not enough to create a shibud. I think we're asked, why not? Alam aloy, why ever not? Milidim is dabni bedinyan. After all, we're not just talking about words. This is words where cash is exchanging hands. Because of it. He's giving her actual money for the chance to win this ksuba. why should you consider it something not saleable? No, so that doesn't work either. Ela Mishum Shmuel. No, let's try a third possibility. The reason why it doesn't work, this possibility that she should sell her ksuba b'tevus hanah, the reason is it won't work because of Shmuel's din. Da'amah Shmuel, ha'moicher shtar choy v'chaberi, we learned about this in ksubas. If somebody sells a shtar choy, an IOU, to somebody else, so Reuben owes Shimon money, Shimon takes the shtar choy and sells it to Levi, and then he turns around and forgives the debt and says to Reuven, you don't owe me money anymore. Reuven owed Shimon money. Shimon went and sold the document to Levi. So now Levi is in possession of a document that says that Reuven owes Shimon $1,000, which means eventually he'll be able to collect on it. But meanwhile, Shimon has the ability to go and tell Reuven one day, you don't owe the $1,000 anymore. That piece of paper that Levi has is now a worthless piece of paper.
Once it's been sold, how can Reuven have the right to get it?
Not Reuven, Shimon. Okay, so there's a few different approaches that Rishonim have, the reason why this is. The Rambam takes the view that it's because this whole concept of selling a shtar chayv only exists in the Rabbanon. It doesn't exist there right. Therefore, the Rabbanon, the same Rabbanon who said the Rabbanon had the authority to say that that you can sell a shtar chayv. They don't have the authority to override the fact that the original malva is able to be moichel the loiva.
They were not what?
They don't have the authority to override minat torah. Malva can be moichel to a loiva. They don't have the ability to override that.
Except in that case.
No, not except in that case. Because the whole concept of selling a shtar is only dirabanan. Therefore, that's it. So the sale is valid dirabanan, but the mechila is valid daraisa, and that overrides the thing dirabanan. There's others. Tosfos talks in a couple of places about the concept that there's two different kinds of shibud. Whenever there's a loan, there's a shibud that the actual loan has to be paid back, and there's a shibud on the nechassim. So like this, when you forgave, you have the ability to forgive one, and therefore the other one automatically disappears. A couple of different approaches. But whatever it is, them's the facts. Now, Tosfos does discuss over here the fact that in that case, a person who does that, a person who goes and forgives a loan like that, according to the mayor, at any rate, is going to be chayev because he caused the other person a loss. He caused Levi a loss. It's called dinah d'garmi, and as we'll learn later on in the next paragraph, the mayor holds you chayev on dinah d'garmi, and that is in fact our law. Not necessarily the same amount. Tosfos discusses that a little bit, but at any rate, though, the fact is there does exist the possibility. There does exist the possibility to be moichel it. And by the way, Tosfos says, even according to the mayor, what happens according to the mayor? How can the wife be moichel to her husband? Then she's with him without a ksuba, and her mayor said that's no good. Fine, they'll write a new ksuba. So what happens? In other words, the wife will have gone and sold the ksuba, the tevus hanah, to Levi. Meanwhile, she'll have been moichel the ksuba to her husband. We can't live together. Fine, we'll write a new ksuba. Meanwhile, Levi is out in the cold.
And what kind of recourse does Levi have?
That's the point. He doesn't. Vafilu yodesh moichel. So, and not only that, even the heir to the original malva is able to be moichel the loan that his father gave out. So therefore, the point is, so she can't sell her ksuba b'tevus hanah because the Levi, the potential buyer, knows that this could happen, and therefore, why should he bother spending any money on it?
Mm-hmm. Okay, if she could find a sucker to do it.
But come on, So they answered back. The Yeshivalites answered back. Why? Zabuni Zabin. Fine. Let her go ahead and sell it. Vititinle and pay off the nizik because again, that's the situation. The situation we're talking about over here is she was mazik somebody. We're trying to figure out how she should be able to pay him. Fine. Let her sell her ksuba. Let her find somebody who's willing to take that chance on tova and buy it for tova sanah and pay off the nizik. And then, okay, she's moichel it afterwards. Fine, she's moichel it afterwards. Fine, maybe you could find somebody who's willing to buy it under such conditions. Amri, and the answer no. Kol legabi no. The answer is Amri. Kol legabi baal vade moichel alev asedin elahu zvina. Because when it comes to her and her husband, it's not just a chance. Whenever a person sells a shtar chayv, the person, Levi, who buys the shtar chayv is always taking that risk that Shimon might be moichel it. But fine, it's a risk.
If you like,
You can stipulate anything. It's nice your mom and it's kind, fine. But if you don't stipulate, you know you're taking that chance. But under ordinary circumstances, you don't have a reason to think that Shimon's going to turn around and do that. Here, when you're talking about a husband and a wife, you can be pretty certain that she's going to do that. Therefore, be a dayim loyach sedinu. Therefore, we're not going to set up a situation like this and make her sell her ksuba b'tevus hanah in a case where the other person is definitely going to end up losing out of it, because we have strong reason to think that she will end up being merkel her ksuba to her husband and thereby leave him out in the cold. We don't want to do that.
Why would she do that?
Because she and her husband, she ultimately wants to collect her ksuba. She at least wants to have the chance of collecting her ksuba. She doesn't really want a third party to be involved between them.
Somebody sells a chayv to somebody else, and the malva can be Michael. Those people now, even if the malva, and the malva has no right to sell it.
So again, the malva has the right to sell it, but
wouldn't the one who buys it say, on one condition, the malva has
if he puts such a condition, if he puts such a condition, fine. Kol tnai shel mamon kayim. But if he doesn't put such a stipulation, yeah.
So we
can definitely assume that she would do that. And therefore, we chachamim do not want to set up a situation where somebody else is going to end up buying it, and for sure, not to harm her previous husband, where the advantage of it is that the nizik will be paid off right away, but the disadvantage is that this other third party who buys the ksuba, b'tevus hanah, is definitely going to lose out of it. We don't want to do that.
We don't want it. Why do we say that she would definitely do it?
Because we can definitely assume that she, since it's her and her husband, and not Sam and Malva and Aloyva who are unrelated to each other, then we can assume that she would.
She has a microphone?
Yes.
Even if they divorce?
No, this is before they're divorced. This is while they're still married. While they're still married, yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. It's a din that Shmuel said. So fine, let's take another possibility. Why don't we say, let her sell the ksuba b'tevus hanah to the very person that she injured, the very person that she owes the money to anyway for the injury. Let her sell it to him b'tevus hanah. Sit in that way, if she's mochel her ksuba to her husband, he doesn't end up losing out. Because after all, he would have gotten nothing at all. So like this, basically, better than nothing. Like this, he would have gotten nothing at all as long as she's married. Like this, at least he has a chance. If for whatever reason she's not Moichel with Suba, then at least he has something of value in his hands. But after all, Kol Legavi Baal Vade Mochla. No, we're back to what we just said, that when it comes to her husband, we can definitely assume that she will be Moichel with Suba. And then, like Tosfos said, just write a new one in order to avoid the problem of living with him without ksuba. We're not going to be matriach based in to be involved in such a case for nothing. When the nizik is anyway not going to get anything useful out of it. Like this, in other words, we're going to do this whole elaborate charade. We're going to make him buy the ksuba b'tevus hanah so now he has a chance to collect his money eventually. Meanwhile, she's going to be in mochel it. So he ends up with nothing. Well, hachila, if we didn't do the whole thing, he'd also end up with nothing. Better, we should just wash our hands of the thing and just say, fine, you nizik, as long as she's married, you don't really have any recourse because she doesn't have any nechassim of her.
Can he put in a chayus on karka or something?
No, he's not a malva. No. It just means that she owes that money. If she ever does get nechassim of her own, she'll have to pay it. But meanwhile, as long as she's married, we don't have a way to arrange it.
He has to give it, not the daven, right? And how does that responsible?
Yes, but he doesn't have to pay money.
Right, okay. Right, okay. That's what we talked about yesterday. The same way as a master is not responsible to pay for the nizakim of his eved, because the eved has das, and you don't want the eved to be mad at his master. There's some point in this out of the nizakim, and he's going to cost his master millions of dollars in nizakim. Okay, the Gemara says, Ella Hodatanya, fine. What about this that we learn in a Braisa? A Braisa says, similarly, if a wife injures her own husband,
For Nezik, the one who injured, he pays from, he's entitled to have some minimum in his possessions, and he pays from excess, or we take even the share from the back?
No, I don't think we take that. No, we probably misadri in the Baal Chayv. I don't know. I don't know exactly. It's a good question.
So technically, you will say that the rich lady, she has a lot of stuff.
No, but the fact is, stuff. Whatever she owns, her husband has rishus to. Okay. Fine. What about this that we learned in Braisa? We say the same way, if a woman injures her own husband, she doesn't lose her ksuba thereby. Am I? Now, why should we say that? Why should we say that not? By the same logic, fine, the same kind of Tevah Sanah business, let her sell the Ksuba back to her own husband, Tevah Sanah. Baha Chabala, for this injury. Again, because, again, if she were to be Moichel the Ksuba afterwards, then he hasn't lost anything by it. Fine, we're saying we don't want to involve Basin for nothing, but that's when there's a third party involved. When it's just her and her husband, fine, why don't we do it? Like this, if she's not Moichole, then he stands to eventually have a chance to collect his chavala from her, the amount for his injury from her ksuba. Okay, and if he dies first or divorces her, instead of paying her ksuba, he'll collect it because that he bought it with Tevah Sanah. If she dies first, fine, then he yarshins her anyway, he hasn't lost anything. And again, the answer is, again, yes, but this goes according to Rav Meir. Fine, but again, Rav Meir says that you can't keep your wife without a ksuba. There has to be a ksuba, and she can't be merkala to him. Okay, again, the time of my, Kadesh Lai Tekalab Ein of Lysia, and after all, what's Rav Meir's reason for that? Because you don't want to make it too easy for him to divorce her. Then over here, if she's Merkel Huxuba to him in a situation like this, it'll make it all the easier. He'll say, good, then I have good reason to want to divorce you, because then I'll be able to collect the Huxuba to pay for the injury. Okay. Then the question is, Ihochi, but if you're gonna take that logic, Hashtanami Magarish Lava Gavi Lava Chav Limine. Fine, by the same logic then, forget about who's selling the Ksuba B'Tovah Sanah. And if she doesn't sell it to him, B'Tovah Sanah, same idea. If he he'll still have incentive to divorce her, because then she'll have money where he can collect his Chavala from. The answer is, Kigun Dinafish Ksubasa, yes, but we're talking about a case where she has a larger Ksuba. It's more than the basic 100 or 200. He's not going to want to lose a lot. Purta means a little bit. Because of that little bit that he stands to collect for his Kabbalah, he's not going to want to lose a lot. He's not going to want to divorce her just in order to be able to collect the chavala, which is only a small fraction of the amount. Okay, then if he did fish a ksubasa maksuba deraisa, fine. If her ksuba is larger than the basic amount anyway, what's the problem? Noikma ksuba deraisa, fine. Just say then that, fine. So her ksuba, let's say, is 250 instead of the basic 200. Fine. The minimum required in order to stay married is 200. Let's narrow it down to that. The idyach tizabne niyal lebechavle. And fine, let her sell the additional 50 to him and pay out of that. Let her sell the extra 50, b'tevah sanah. And then that way he can collect out of that. And the answer is, fine, but you could be talking about a case that won't work if her ksuba is in fact not any larger than a ksuba deraisa. Suppose, for example, that the amount to be paid for his injury is only 4 zuzim. In order to gain four zuzim, he's not going to go and want to divorce her and have to pay out 25 slow. Which again, you can't say 4 out of 25 because that'll leave only 21 and that's not enough for a ksuba. Tosfos rather takes that with zuzim because a ksuba is more than 25 zuzim, it's 200 zuzim. But anyway, the point is that's machamisha, right? So there was a gear set at the machamisha zuzi. So Tosfos takes that with zuzim over there. The point is that, like this, if he divorces her, he'd have to pay out the entire ksuba. What is he going to get paid in return out of that? 4 zuzim. He's not going to bother for that. Mashenkin, it's true. If her ksuba is in fact larger than the minimum amount, then fine, you can make her sell the overage and pay out of that. And we'll continue.
Ksuba will stay intact.
So yeah, so we'll rewrite a new ksuba. That says instead of 250, now the amount of the ksuba is 200. The additional 50 was sold off in order to pay for the net.